and welcome to episode 20 of Middle Aged Geeks, which is quite astonishing. We aim to tackle anything from movies, TVs, games, tech, comics, and anything else geeky that takes our fancy. I'm one of your hosts, Daz, and this is my co-host, Phil. How are you doing, Philly? 20 episodes, man.
Yeah, I'm happy to kind of hit that landmark. You know, it's been good fun. It's been nice to kind of mix it up with like the little series we did of the 1999 ones, doing some shitty movies, doing some great movies, yeah. Getting reminded of some, you know, really old retro and tech and games and stuff as well, and getting feedback and other people saying shit, yeah, I remember that too. You know, it's been good fun, you know, for something that we're not serious podcasters. We just have been doing this as a bit of fun. So to get such lovely feedback and to be knocking such crack out of it, it's great, you know, to be think that we're 20 episodes later, and it is lovely. It's a nice milestone to hit.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, isn't it? So yeah, what have you been up to? Have you been watching anything good?
Not a massive amount. I think I mentioned to you I wasn't really feeling myself recently, yeah. So I haven't been doing a lot of the stuff that I usually enjoy, but I've continued to play Control when I've had a bit of downtime, which I've enjoyed. Haven't really watched anything new. I do like, I have stuff on the list. I'm dying to watch that Shogun.
Disney+.
You know, yeah, I really want to watch that. I want to finish off watching True Detective, and there's a bunch of shit that I want to watch, but I haven't done. I've kind of been just doing a bit of reading some comics, and not doing a massive amount, kind of low key. What about yourself?
Yeah, well, Jesus, I got stuck into that Shogun last night. There's only two episodes online, but the first episode is, Jesus Christ, it's fantastic. Like, it really is really fantastic. It's like, it's starring our main man, Hiroyuken Sanada, his Scorpion from the Mortal Kombat movies, and I'm referencing him as Scorpion from the Mortal Kombat movies. He's done a plethora of other fantastic work, but it's fucking great. Like, it's set in Japan in 1600, Sanada is like fighting for his life, as his fellow council members are kind of rallying against him, and a mysterious European ship is found marooned in a nearby fishing village, and things start to get a bit fucking crazy from then. And yeah, it's just incredible. The locations, the cinematography, the set design, costumes, it's a perfect example of the heights that TV can get to. Such a strong cast. I've only seen episode one, and already there's been a glorious decapitation, and yeah, someone boiled to death in a fucking cauldron, and yeah, they really don't fall back with the gruesome nature of the times.
Sweet.
But yeah, it's so, so good. So, so good. So I can't wait and watch an episode two later. In terms of what I've been playing, more Helldivers, of course. But I was reading some good reviews on that Pacific Drive. Seen that Pacific Drive game?
Oh, man, yeah. I haven't played it, but I love the look of it when they were doing the release. It just looks so unique. You know,
it's fantastic. I bought it this morning and played it. I said I'd play it for an hour at lunch because it was a snowstorm here in Ireland today. And on a side note, the wipers on my car decided to fucking stop working in the middle of snowstorm today, coming back from that. Yeah, dropped my daughter to playgroup. So that was interesting. I had to kind of wait for the snow to stop, drive 10 seconds, and then stop again and so forth. But yeah. But anyway, since I was doing nothing else today, decided, I'd take an hour at lunch, which turned into about 3 or 4 hours, purchased the game. And yeah, it's fucking brilliant. Like, it's really, really good. It's like first person driving survival game, which sounds a bit kind of odd and strange, but your car is like your only companion. There's no real combat in the game, and you're kind of navigating a surreal and like a surreal world filled with kind of anomalies, and it's just weird and wonderful. And
it looks like it'll age well. Do you know the look of it? Yeah. Like, it looks really that kind of that aesthetic, like the way cell shading games have aged really well. I was looking at it thinking, Jesus, yeah, it's real unique and quality looking game. You just kind of get the idea of getting to that next spot and doing whatever the upgrades you can to your car. Yeah, no, it looks really cool. Is it full whack? Is it like 30 or 40 quid or what is it?
It's 30 euros, yeah, which is kind of pretty good. I mean, I've seen people online that they're like 15, 20 hours into it and still nowhere near completing it. So, okay. But yeah, it's got those kind of lovely, like it reminds me of the kind of scavenging moments from something like Days Gone. That kind of stuff where I really enjoyed, or like Death Stranding, that kind of slower pace at times. But then there are moments when it gets fucking frantic and the tension ramps up and yeah, it gets kind of balls to the wall. But yeah, it's fucking, it's really, really, really good. And yeah, also I've been watching, I was talking to you earlier, but I've been watching June 2 because we have been...
June 1.
Or June 1, Jesus Christ. Because we are, June 2 is on the mind. Yeah, we're going to see June 2 tomorrow. We're recording this on Friday evening. I'm pretty pumped about that. So I'll be watching June 1 just to get back into the zone for tomorrow. Are you pumped for tomorrow?
Yeah, man. I mean, like, look.
With it, yeah.
The minute the first one ended, I was pumped for the second one. You know, it just, it's incredible. The cast is outrageous. It's just, yeah, it's excellent. Don't like that they're making all the bad guys bald. I mean, I really take that personally, but whatever. No, it looks really, really good. It's one of these ones that, you know, the episode, like reviewing, chatting about it, could be like 4 hours long kind of thing. We should love the first one so much. Yeah. I think Denis Villeneuve is really the only one that could make it, you know. Well, you know, one or two other directors out there, you know.
He's at the top of his game now at the moment. He's very quickly cementing himself as like not just a best sci-fi director around, but like his resume is quite striking. Just banger after it's banger incredible. After banger. It's just pretty incredible. But yeah, June 2, the I think it's at 94% on Rotten Tomatoes at the moment, like 276 reviews. It's pretty good. The 16 people that don't like it. And I love when a movie is up in the 90s and after you go and see it, I love just reading the people that didn't like it and just to see how the fuck can you possibly not like something that's getting 94%, 95%. But yeah, before we get into our movie review, actually, the response to our four-part Night Party Like It's 1999 series that we put out all through February was really great. It was nice to hear people sharing some of their favorite scenes online, some of their favorite movies as well. And of course, after a magnificent four films, we're going to come crashing down to Earth this week, crashing down with the reality check of all reality checks. And that is Madame Web, a colossal clusterfuck of a movie. And Phil will be taking us through that shit show shortly. But before that, I just want to touch on some other news that, like Superman Legacy, that James Gunn movie, that the name was changed to just Superman, which is pretty iconic, which is great. That's due out next summer. But there were reports online saying it was going to be $364 million. And James Gunn came out on Twitter and said, no, it's more likely it's just 150 to 200. And I was looking up the most expensive comic book movies. Number one was Age of Ultron, which is $444 million that cost. Just like, what the
fuck? Age of Ultron cost more than Endgame.
Yeah, 444. It's just like, what? Maybe it's due to the reshoots or something like that, but that's a start. Endgame is $356 million. Infinity War, $325. Okay. That's fucking astonishing, like. I mean,
that's insane.
Good looking movie, but yeah, quite strange. But Justice League was $300 million, and that's a perfect example of one of those movies where you're going, where did the money go? Because that movie looked like fucking trash. You know what I mean? And more on that, where did the budget go, later on in our movie review. But we're not going to have a retro corner this week because I was thinking actually of doing The Crow, and then realized that the remake is out this June. And this week, some new images were released of Bill Skarsgård as the new Crow. And online reaction has been slightly divisive, to say the least. Did you see them yourself?
I did see them. And you know, the first thing that sprung to mind when people started slating it was, I remember the cover of Empire magazine had Heath Ledger as the Joker.
Yeah.
And people were fucking moaning and complaining. That's not what he looks like. That people were fuming, the abuse he was getting, that, you know, they were getting, first of all, they were giving out about the casting and, you know, talk about being fucking proven wrong, but they were talking about how he looked, and the look ended up being absolutely perfect for that movie. The Gotham that he had made, that Christopher Nolan envisioned with him in it, giving it this more realistic kind of, you know, look, was absolutely perfect, but it was absolutely slated. You know, and people can fucking say, oh, I thought it was great the whole time. It wasn't. Loads of people were complaining about it. And I think loads of people are the same at this now. So I'm holding off judgment. It could end up being shit. It could end up being people who thought Jared Leto's Joker was going to be shit. And it was. So, you know, it could end up going that way. But, you know, I don't know. I think the pictures look, they look cool enough. But it wasn't too mad on the weird nipple tattoo, though. You know, it's the eye of the thing is a nipple. I always think those tattoos look weird. But, like, I don't know. I think Bill Sarsgaard's great. So I love him as Pennywise. I like him as an actor. I think he'll do a great job with it. So I'm just, I'm going to reserve judgment. I don't really feel one way or the other about the photos.
Yeah, what about you? Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I like that it's a different take, but I was thinking exactly the same thing about, especially when Jared Leto's Joker, when that came online, people went bananas. And I was, again, just like, it's a different take, reserve judgment. The first trailer looked decent for Suicide Squad, and obviously then it didn't really work out. It was a bit of a misfire, but I like the look of this. And mainly I like the actor, but then I looked at the director, and it's Rupert Sanders, who directed Ghost in the Shell, which I thought was, you know, okay, pretty good sci-fi. He directed Snow White and the Huntsman, which I didn't see. I'm not sure about that. But more importantly, he directed Five's music video Slam Dunk the Funk back in 1997. So I'm pretty sure
this is going to be a banger. maybe he'll bring the lads back. You know, just give them cameo roles.
Just rehash the track for the title sequence. You know, fuck's sake. But the jury's out on that. But Alex Proy is actually the director of the original Crow, came out online and openly bashed the new image on social media, which I thought was pretty poor show.
Assless.
I mean, yeah, a bit of a dick move. Like, I mean, I loved The Crow. I loved Dark City and iRobot. But, like, he made Gods of Egypt.
Yeah.
Which is one of the worst movies of all time. Like, and that's a movie he actually came out as well after that and blamed the audience and critics for just not getting it. Remember that? That's just like, what the fuck you talk about? So yeah, I thought that was very petty what he said. He was saying, like, you know, is he supposed to be all cool with his badass tats? And said, next reboot, please. And said that the images gave him a good laugh, and you're mocking the look of it. It's, yeah, have a bit more class, man. I thought it was a pretty dickhead move.
Yeah.
And no one asked him his opinion. You know, and it's just, actors and directors should not bash other actors or directors, especially on imagery when you haven't seen a second in the movie. So, fuck him anyway. But
dick move.
Yeah.
Especially when the last movie you're known for is Gods of Egypt, which I'm actually going to be mentioning when we start talking about the movie review. You know, that movie is an absolute abomination. Like, an abomination of a movie. The fucking Sheik to come out. I think it's just, you should be keeping your head down and low until you come out with a new banger and people can go, okay, he's back. But until you do that, you can do that. Yeah, I would just,
and I think that was,
keep your head down.
Yeah, that was back in 2016. Anyway, Gods of Egypt, and he's done fuck all since. So obviously I don't think he's a very nice person to be around or work with. But which is a shame, because I loved the original Crow. That actually turns 30 later this year, so we might do a retro corner on that when the new movie comes out in tandem and have a look at back and forth. But yeah, that the original Crow, when it came out, that blew my head off. I was only talking about my brother about when it came out, that we used to rent VHS tapes, and we had two VHS players. This shows our age back in the day. And we'd go to Extravision, you know, and rent four or five videos, and then come back and copy them onto other VHS tapes, felt like a fucking tech god back then. It's just like, wow, man. Which, so yeah, that's the image, or that's the memory that comes to mind straight away when I think of the Crow. But speaking of my brother, who's in Australia, he said that he was listening to the Matrix episode and said that it brought him back when he first moved to Sydney. He was working opposite a building, and he's just like, I fucking know that building from somewhere. And it was the building where the helicopter slams into with the circular explosion.
Oh,
deadly. Working beside that, and realized that, like, from working and walking around there, that everything was so familiar. It's just got that certain look. And one of his offices was outside that main street where Neo makes a final phone call and flies up into the sky. So, yeah, pretty fucking cool. Pretty cool spot. And also one last bit of feedback. Sean online commented on your reel about the movies with V in the title. And he said, well, yeah, the exception to that rule, he thought, was Freddy versus Jason, which he thought was pretty great and had a slick soundtrack. And I said, I'm not too sure about the film being great now, but I'd watch anything with Robert Englund on screen and that character anytime.
It was, it was entertaining. That movie is entertaining. I'll give you that. I mean, Robert Englund is fantastic because you've got this guy who actually does crack wise jokes and then this essentially mute, you know, so it's fun. Yeah, no, I can see why people might have fun with that one. All right.
Yeah. But yeah, so with that out of the way, it's time to hand over to Phil, who has seen this movie twice. Let it be known, he's seen this movie twice. Over to you, Phil.
Cheers, Daz. Yes, I am the only person on planet Earth to have seen this movie twice, including the people who made it. It's... Yeah, we're doing Madam Web. So this one we mentioned before is... it's when we mentioned Gods of Egypt at the start. The writers of Gods of Egypt were actually the writers of this. They also wrote Morbius, wow, Last Witch Hunter, Power Rangers, and Dracula Untold, Last Witch Hunter. Like, you're talking about guys who just have an absolutely piss poor resume. Sony have been knocking out this kind of Spider-Verse kind of stuff that they have the rights for, and they just keep fucking flopping. You know, they're just terrible, terrible movies. And why they would pick these writers if that's your resume? Like, oh, wow, you've seen what these movies have done. Why the fuck would you think that it was a good idea to put these in charge of this? And the idea was that they wanted to make a franchise. They wanted this to be these, you know, spider women, you know, fucking what's her face, Madam Web, and the spider women, like, spin-offs and franchise out of it. But, like, how the fuck would you put these guys in charge of it? It just boggles the mind.
They forgot to put them in the movie in the first place.
Yeah, it's just it makes no fucking... The only good thing is that they didn't use Jessica Drew, Spider-Woman. Like, so, you know, she's kind of that, maybe the one that a lot of people would know. Mm. So hopefully maybe we'll get to see a decent Spider-Woman movie in the future. But, like, it was just... Yeah. And the other thing about having these, like, taking the punt on these, like, terrible writers, going, okay, well, maybe this time they'll knock something out of the way, is that why take that risk when you've got an unproven director? Like, if you've got someone who's, like, really competent writers, go, okay, directors may be a bit green, but the writers will know, you know, the writers will have a good solid script that won't be too far he or she will be able to go wrong with it. But as you said, most of her stuff was mostly television, not really done feature length films. Mm. Like, so why take a massive risk and a budget of like 80 million they gave them for this, which is
scandalous.
The character, yeah, and it's a character that not a lot of people know. Like, not a lot of people know Morbius either. You know, if you're not familiar with comics, not a lot of people know Madam Web. So to risk 80 million on this is just, I just find the whole thing fucking mind-boggling.
It's like they wanted it to fail. It's almost like it's harder to make a film this shit than it is to just kind of accidentally make a 2-star movie. Like, it's like people have gone out of their way to kind of, oh, let's get those shit writers. Let's get somebody who's never directed anything ever. Let's get a load of actors that seemingly have never fucking read a script before or performed anything in their life ever before. It's like, oh, I read this part. Hello. Fucking hell. It's just, yeah, it's staggering. Yeah, I don't know what the thinking was.
Yeah, I don't know what the thinking was behind it. Like, and actually, just before we get, I know we haven't even started into the movie yet. The girl who's, oh shit, her name fucking escapes me. Isabella Merced. She plays the kind of Latina Spider Girl. She's come out and blamed the fact that the movie's done so shit on like toxic men, that men purposely don't go and see these movies because it's about women superheroes. Yeah. And she said it's the reason, she reckons it's the reason the Marvels and Birds of Prey did badly was because toxic dudes don't go and see women superheroes. And it's just, it could be
all the reviews
the
from women and men. All the reviews are from people like, that don't the thing, like these the, movies.
The reviews are from everybody. And if you, I mean, your kind of point is kind of shot down when you look at Wonder Woman, which is like, you pretty much universally like, that was solely women, apart from Chris Pine in it, it's women everywhere. Wonder Woman, all the women on the island, like
written, directed by
You know, directed by a woman. It's lauded. You know what I mean? So it's kind of, I don't really think she has a point there. I get you want to defend the movie you're in, but it's just a bad fucking movie. But look, let's just get into this bad fucking movie because it really is shocking. It kicks off, and what you, I'll tell you how the laziness of it is even the opening credits, they don't even bother with like a fancy, you know, opening credit thing where it's all webbed up and they do some shit with it. You know, like we talked about with in Matrix, you know, doing the lines there, do whatever. It's almost just the text that comes up, Madam Web, you know, whatever. It might as well just say Madam Web, colon, whatever. You know, it's so little effort from the very start before we've even seen a person yet. The laziness is already fucking on display. We start off and we're in Peru in the 70s, and it's Carrie Bichet is playing a pregnant woman who is, what's her face, turns out is Madame Web, Cassie Webb's mother, and she's away in the jungle in Peru, and she's trying to find this elusive spider, and there's loads of exposition about why she's trying to get the spider. It's, you know, it could help cure diseases, all this kind of stuff. And as she's looking, this her kind of guy that comes along, who says he agreed to come along with her, comes over her shoulder, and he's the guy who's working with her. Ezekiel Sims is his name. And I do not know casting. Yeah, I don't know where the casting we're going with this dude, man, because fucking hell, there is not one line or scene he is in that's delivered well. It's fucking unbelievable. It gets to the point where you're kind of like, is he on doing this on purpose? Like, is this a wind-up? Like, he's delivering his lines, and there's just this. It's almost like he's doing that. What are those like midday soap opera kind of deliveries and stuff?
And it's even worse than that. Like, it's the worst written part and the worst performance of a part I think I've ever seen. Like that actor has apparently has a number of awards and nominations to his name and previous work and all this kind of stuff. So I can't say he's a shit actor, but like he gives an absolutely shocking attempt at a performance here. Like some of the dialogue was embarrassing. Like I was in fucking stitches laughing. Like he just says one line or something. You're just like, I don't even know what he's trying to do. It's just, are you trying to stay monotone throughout the whole fucking sentence you're trying to deliver? It's just, I don't know what he was doing. Like, I don't know what the director was trying to do with him. It was hysterical.
Yeah, no, and it was throughout. You know, that was the wild thing. You know, but he, you see that your one is, you know, heavily pregnant, and he comes back and he rushes into her tent and he starts taking photos of all her work. But before he does that, he's talking way better and about the spider to her, and he says, "Oh, did you hear about the spider and apparently it gives these las arañas, the spiders, it gives them these people who live in the trees, these superpowers.
Spider people.
You know, spider people, essentially. They can fucking jump over the trees, and your one goes, like, really, all this stuff about people who can climb trees and they can got super strength and all the rest of it, that's mythology. Why would I care about any of that kind of stuff? All I care about is, you know, it could be saved for medicals, da-da-da-da-da. So anyway, he goes back to the camp. While she's looking for the spider, he's in her tent and he's taking photos of all her research, because he's going to try and find out what's going on and steal it, because he wants it for himself. She arrives back and she's found the spider, and everybody's like, oh shit, that's fucking great. He pulls out a gun and just fucking kills everybody. Doesn't even think there's any other way to get this fucking spider. Maybe just steal it. You know, steal the jar. When she's not looking.
Steal the jar.
Steal the jar. No. He fucking murder shoots everyone, everybody. Including her. She's preggers. And he takes
and
his spider.
And he's the lone survivor. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't think that might be called into question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He just left these dead bodies and no one's going to wonder where their families are. And so anyway, he pisses off. He legs it off. And then the spider people do come down. You see them and it's fucking shocking. What? They come down and they're like, they're supposed to almost look like, I don't know, like Spider-Man himself kind of costumes, because they're red body paint on with like vines wrapped around them that almost look like webs. So it's almost so it's almost like a Spider-Man outfit. But they're just like, and it looks just almost like cave people. They bring her, the poor old pregnant woman who's dying, into this like magic pool of water.
Yeah.
And when they're holding her there, he lets one of these little spiders come along that bites her.
Mm.
And the spider, obviously, venom goes into her. She doesn't make it, but she gives birth to her kid in the water. He says, you know, I can save you, but we can save your child. And then says to her, one day she'll come back when she's ready or when she needs answers. And that's it. Your one dies. And we get a flash then to present day. I say present day. It's what, the early 2000s?
2003, yeah.
Yeah, which is bizarre that it's 2003, and I think we see one person with a mobile phone. Nobody else seems to have phones. You know,
but somebody on a train, actually, somebody on the subway has a PlayStation PSP, which wasn't released until 2005, but they say it's 2003.
Yeah.
But the producer said they chose 2003 so they could use the word or use the song Toxic by Britney Spears, and they actually said that on the red carpet.
Yeah,
and
literally
not even
as
a joke, just like, oh, you're fucking shitting me, straight face and all, clowns.
If you were, I'm pretty sure you can use that song even if it's not 2003. Yeah, if you really want to use it, throw it in, no one gives a shit. But yeah, so we get flash forward and she's little baby who's born is all grown up, and it's Dakota Johnson plays her. And she's a paramedic, and she's driving along when she and her paramedic partner is Ben Parker, as in Uncle Ben from Spider-Man. And he's played by Adam Scott, who I absolutely love.
Yeah.
And I would love to see Adam Scott in a better superhero movie, because I think he's excellent.
He's the only semi-decent thing in this. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know he's a fan of this kind of stuff. So it would have been great to see him in something a lot better. But anyway, while they're out doing the fucking case, she ends up fucking falling into the water. She pulls someone out of the car, falls into the water, and she, while she's under the water, she has this like fucking mad, weird spider experience. I don't really know why it happens now and why it didn't happen at any stage up until she hit like her early 30s or whatever. Yeah. She falls off into the water, and all of a sudden, she's getting like weird flashes. She doesn't really understand that she's seeing the future, but she's getting flashes of, you know, blood on her hands.
That she's seeing the future.
We'll get to that. Anyway, she wakes up. She comes to because Ben has pulled her out of the water while she's been down, and he's given her CPR, and she's like, she wakes up. She goes, oh, did I die? He goes, yeah, like you were dead for like 3 minutes. She looks fucking grand. She's like, grand, fucking, that's cool.
Yeah, that's
just
okay.
Looks good. She is just like what? You were dead. You might even have brain damage. Like, how the fuck? It's ridiculous. Like, just thank God I'm okay. No, thank you for saving my life, you cunt. But anyway, they go back to the hospital, and you know, you find out how awkward she is around people and all this kind of shit, and Ben invites her, says, look, you got to come over. The sister is having, my sister is having a, is having a baby shower. So why don't you come on over to the house? And this for me actually was one of the only kind of good parts, was that like, she's starting to have, just before this happens and during this, she's starting to have flashes and she doesn't understand what they are. They're flashes of the future, you know, little premonitions. But there's a couple of good jokes in this, because she asked that, she's talking about how her mother died while giving birth, and she just gets really awkward about it because Emma Roberts,
that was kind of an,
who's playing Peter good. Parker's mother, is pregnant. And so some of her delivery there, the comic relief, was actually quite funny in that scene. But very short lived. You know, we find out obviously Emma Roberts is pregnant, and that's,
that part when you're saying that they set up that she's obviously she's a little awkward around people, you know, raised in the fucking jungle or whatever it was. But they never say how she actually got to America and became a paramedic.
Yeah, she said she was raised like in an orphanage. They said she was an orphanage.
Yeah, just with spider people,
foster family. But
the spider people just drop her off at the U.S. embassy and just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, how did they get there? Like, what? There's no explanation there at all.
But like, one of my
flashes that she's having.
But one of my favorite bits, when she's in that hospital and the person that she saves, she's there, and the person that she saves, daughter comes out or something, or she's handed like a picture that the daughter of the person she saved wants to give to her. And she looks at Ben, she's just like, what do I do with this? And he's like, well, just put it in your pocket and, you know, whatever. And it's just like, you're kind of going, what the fuck, have you never spoken to anyone in your life? do you know what it's like to be a person in the world? Like, what the fuck? It's the most heavy-handed, I'm awkward, socially awkward. Like, it's just I could not stop laughing, like what the fuck are you doing, like
she's in her 30s and she has to deal with people every day. She's all, it's okay, sir, like when she's at their accident scene, it's okay, so you're gonna be fine. She's doing all this stuff. Part of her job is to calm people, is to have a bedside manner, is to keep people
from freaking
out. Just
a picture from a kid.
And yet she's like, I don't know what to do with this picture. And then even when the thing walks away, and she's like, oh, it's cardboard. I don't even know. Should I bend it? It's just, what the fuck is wrong with you?
But anyway,
at the baby shower, she's having a couple of weird flashbacks there, which make everybody look at her weird because she's like, didn't this already happen? And Emma Roberts, who's up the duff, is obviously Peter Parker, you know, Spider-Man's mom, who's pregnant with him.
Why can't they say his name, though? There's this whole thing about, they don't say his name.
There's a couple of times they do it,
Someone said online that it's up to do it, like, rights-wise, they can't. But they have Spider-Man movies with Peter Parker. Sony do those themselves. I just don't know why they... You know, it's just like, we're not going to say his name. It's just like, okay.
They also don't say May. They don't say, because they talk... at Uncle Ben or whatever, Ben Parker is saying that he's dating, and she goes, what's her name? And he won't say, and she goes, oh, it must be serious. It must be serious if you won't tell your best friend, the woman who's seen his name. What the fuck? Like, how does that even make sense? Like, I can't tell you your name. I can't tell you her name because she means too much to me. Yeah. And you're only my friend. You don't deserve it. Like, fucking dumbass. It makes no fucking sense. So we go back then to Sims, and he's in present day, and like, he's obviously made a fortune for himself, and he goes off to the theater and he makes the eyes at this one and sits beside her, and I think they're like at an opera or whatever.
Yeah.
And he convinces her obviously to come back to his place. The only thing I actually thought here that did well was that he's a dude who's obviously maybe what, in his 40s, I'd say. Yeah. The actor is that they actually major one age appropriate.
Similar age, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, which is something that just doesn't seem to happen.
That's the best thing about the movie.
So he brings her back to his place, and, you know, it's fucking obviously really this flash place. He ends up getting the ride. And, like, you don't mention at any point that he's going there to meet her because she's an NSA agent or anything like that. Mm. But he wakes up from having this, like, fucking nightmare thing. And he tells her all about it. He wakes up and he's like, yeah, I have a dream, we're going to die. It's the same people that keep coming together. These women, these three girls are just going to get me. I keep seeing my death and dad. Why are you telling this fucking person any of this stuff? Yeah. Anyway, then it turns out he tells her that he's looking to find, he's trying to find them, and that he'll need to get this, he needs to get this fucking software or whatever that the NSA have. And then she realizes, oh my God, he knows I work for the NSA. And so he
like that, seems that, to that's a to, scene from a C-list movie, not even B-list. It's one of the worst scenes I've ever seen. Yeah. You in the cinema just lead it over. I was just like, why is he saying that? And usually Norm just said, just met her, bro. He just met her. it's hilarious. Yeah,
it's ridiculous. It's just such a strange place to give the exposition. And then they haven't explained this yet, but he somehow through his thumbnail is able to inject poison into people because he grabs her wrist and all of a sudden poison starts coursing through her veins. And he's like, you know, tell me the code, your password before the poison reaches your lips. So you can still speak. It's like, what the fuck, man? Just
what's going on here? Like,
just, it's awful. You know, anyway, he ends up doing that and then she ends up dying. And he says some line to her, which I didn't fucking write down, but it was something like, be glad you didn't see your death coming, you know, because he keeps seeing his. It's something ridiculous like that. It's just, oh, what, you're talking to a corpse, you fucking twat. Like, it's just, yeah, absolute dickhead. And actually, while we're in his apartment, did you notice that fucking spider is still alive?
Yeah,
That spider is older than Dakota Johnson in this movie, because the spider presumably has already been alive for a while.
Has an age of day.
By the time it's captured, is it? That is one spider wrinkle, and that spider has an age today. But he's had this spider in captivity for 30 odd years. Yeah, what the fuck? It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, they also, what we get introduced to then is like his person in a, you know, the girl in the chair. So, his version of the Oracle or Ned or whatever is this person. But we get no backstory for her whatsoever. That's why she works for him. There's a throwaway line at one point where he says, you know, find them, I pay you enough money. You don't find out why she's working for him, where she came from. They don't give you anything about this chick at all. Just that she happens to, I think, live with him or live in his apartment or whatever. And there's nothing about her at all to give you anything to reason to care about her, to understand why she's helping him.
That line he gives her, it's just like, I went to a lot. This is probably exactly the rehearsal reading, just like, I went to a lot of trouble to steal these things for you. Use them better. Just like, what?
Yes, that's it. Use them better. Like,
and he's trying to be menacing at the time. It's like, that is the most fucking hilarious. Yeah. Like, you have
to. And she does a proper, like, gulp, you know, almost at the camera.
You
like,
evil madman.
I'm going to get out of this one. It's just, it's fucking ridiculous. But yeah, like during his premonition, he's basically said it's these three teens that are after him, three teen girls. And so he's trying to get them. And so with this, the help of this NSA fucking
spider thing to look.
It's like what Batman had in fucking Dark Knight, where he was able to get access to everybody's phones and know where everybody was. This was access to all CCTV.
But the tech he has
CCTV
for 2003
cameras.
Is pretty
spectacular. It's incredible. It's incredible, like, tech. Yeah, it really is.
It can read dreams.
Face recognition stuff. Like, it's unreal. And so he's after the three of them, which is Sydney Sweeney, Isabella Merced, and Celeste O'Connor play the three of them. 320-something-year-olds all playing supposedly 17-year-olds in this. Yeah. 16-17-year-olds. Just get some fucking kids to play them if you want them to be kids. Otherwise, just play them. I don't know why. Anyway, they're the three that are after. And then we're back again to our main woman, Cassandra. And like, she, as you said, she is not very bright because she keeps having premonitions. Like, if I'm sitting here now and we're having this conversation and something breaks behind me, and then a couple of seconds later, I'm having the conversation and the same thing breaks again, I'm going to be like, holy shit, I just saw that same thing happen. You know, I'm seeing the future or something along those lines. This happens multiple times and she just doesn't cop it at all. She's just kind of shake it off like, well, I better just...
Must have been a hard day at work.
It really a hard day at work. Maybe I just better focus on yet another fucking...
Yeah,
Pepsi
I must be
product
tired.
Product placement. I'm too busy doing product placement to notice that fucking I'm having premonitions. Like,
that scene with her in the Pepsi can, by the way, the Pepsi is the, like, they must have put in half or 40 million of the fucking budget, the amount of product placement. But there's multiple scenes where she has one of those old cans, you know, with the kind of ring pulls, and all you can see when you're looking at the screen, you're just looking at the Pepsi can because it's the old fucking style can or whatever. And she just, she's passing it around from hand to hand. She never fucking opens it.
She doesn't open it at any point. Like,
open the fucking can. And I didn't hear anything she says.
Yeah, she even says what she even says, like, I was thinking maybe I could have a beer. You know, I almost died. Yeah. I can have a beer instead. So, well, that's really not much of a, not much of an advertisement for Pepsi.
For Pepsi, yeah.
You want a Pepsi? Like, have a beer
no,
instead.
No, no, no. I'll put this down instead.
So anyway, doesn't fucking drink the thing. And they keep doing this fucking thing where they're trying to go, doesn't the cracked glass look a bit like spiderweb? Because there's cracked glass everywhere. And they do this shot where, you know, the camera's looking through the cracked glass at her. They do it multiple times, like way, way too many times throughout the movie.
Look what we're framing her in the middle of this cracked glass. Oh,
we get it.
Spiderweb.
Cracked glass, spiderweb. We got it the first fucking time you do it. Stop fucking doing it.
Like, it's still lame,
Yeah, it's just that someone thought this is going to be a really fucking cool shot. Knock it off. Yeah, so she ends up getting on. She's on the, I think we get this, I think it's the subway scene next, isn't it, Des? They get on, she gets on the subway.
Has the pigeon thing happened? The pigeon?
Oh, maybe no, maybe not. That's, oh, yeah. You know, actually, I'm going to let you do the pigeon one, because this, I heard that you might have had the biggest laugh in the cinema.
Jesus Christ. Like, she's in her apartment, and as Phil said, she's had multiple premonitions happen already, and she's still not fucking copping on. And then she's in her apartment. Then she hears a noise at the window, bang! And she looks down, and like a pigeon has smacked into the window. And she opens the window and she picks it up. And she's like, "Oh Jesus, you know, dead pigeon." And then she kind of flashes back or whatever. And she looks over at the window and she's all curious and like, "Whoa, what is happening? Woo!" And she just opens the window. And then a pigeon flies in and she's still like, she's trying to convey with her eyes this amazing thing. She doesn't have the acting pedigree in any way, shape or form to pull any of this off. So she just has to deliver the zinger of a line. She looks down and she just sees the pigeon. She goes, "Guess you didn't die after all." Just so all of us in the audience are up to speed with the fucking amazing screenplay at work here. I guess you didn't die after all. I've never laughed as loud or as hard in cinema, like the Dumb and Dumber style laughing here. It's just like, oh, just I spat out some popcorn. It's just like, it's just shocking. Like, they're playing this for all the 4-year-olds in the audience. Like, fuck me.
Yeah, it's fucking
brilliant.
Shocking. It
brilliant
really
setup,
is.
You know?
And each time she has one of her things, there's another. There's a dumbass exposition thing for most stuff she has to do, but that one was absolutely fantastic. But I think the subway scene is next. She's getting the train.
Oh, yeah.
And
things start
it just
to
so
get
happens
interesting.
They all, things start to, because they're all linked by a web, her and these three girls, they all happen to be in the train station at the same time. Sydney Sweeney's running away and Isabella Merced is, I'm not sure why she's on the train. And then the other one is just hiding from the cops because she's bumped into them and she just jumps onto the train at the last second. And then she has a premonition of Ezekiel Sims coming onto the train. And he comes onto the train. He's just in a suit, right? He's just in a regular clothes. He's coming onto the train and he's looking, and she sees him coming in to kill them, but he's just in regular clothes at that point, right? And the premonition is that he comes in, grabs them, snaps their neck, grabs it, slams her down, breaks her neck off a chair. You know, so she sees all these things happening. So she gets the girls off the train. She's like, you, quick, we got to get off. There's a
get
guy
off the train, you're all going to die.
You're all going to die. And so they're not getting off. She grabs this girl, she grabs Celeste O'Connor's fucking skateboard and they jump off the train. And she's like, "What the hell do you think you're doing? Give me my thing back, da, da, da." She's like, what are you doing? What do you mean someone's trying to kill us? And they look on the train and they can see him, Ezekiel Sims, running through the train, looking out. And all four of them are looking at him as he's looking out, running through the train so he can try and get off. So then they turn around and she goes, "That's what they're after." And he has gotten off the train and changed into his mad Spider-Man outfit. Yeah. Like, why are you hiding? A bunch of people, had she not done a premonition thing, a bunch of people on that train, witnesses galore, would have seen you snapping the neck of three teenagers, would have seen you kill them left, right, and center. What's the point in running off and jumping in and getting into your magic suit now? It fucking makes zero sense.
But that train escape sequence is pathetic. It's pathetic. It's like, as an action set piece, this just goes to show like, where the fuck this budget went and who the fuck is doing their choreography. It's basically them just running off a train and then they see him, and then they run away, and then they go on another train, and then he gets on, and then they just kind of, and by saying run, they kind of just scurry along, and then they go off a train, and that's the set piece. It's just like, whoa, wow, that's, wow, fucking blew my mind there, guys.
It's fucking, it was pathetic. Ridiculous. Like,
so bad.
And so he ends up, she's hustling them out of there. The cops think that because at this stage, the girls think they're being kidnapped. So as Sidney Sweeney shouts out, this chick's trying to kill it. They're trying to kidnap us. And for some reason, there happens to be a full dozen police officers there who all come and try to arrest them. And while they're in the middle of arresting them, Ezekiel Sims comes down in his Spider-Man outfit and starts beating the shit out of the cops. And so they manage to escape and steal a taxi and drive them to the middle of fucking nowhere. Like, this has happened, I think,
Manhattan,
at like Grand
Cent.
This has happened at Grand Central Station. Isn't that what that is? Yeah. That station. So whatever. The underground part of that station. But so I don't know how close they are, but they've driven out to the middle of what is the forest. It's the forest. You know, how did she get the taxi into the forest so far in that no one is going to find them? Unbelievable. And she goes, right, listen, I need to leave you here because weird shit's been happening all day. I can see, she realizes now, I can see the future.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're all linked. They all realize they know we're from different places. One of them lives in the building with her. One of them gave her the finger while she was driving along the taxi. One of them is the daughter of the guy that she saved or the woman she saved, whatever. And so she goes, I have to leg it off. I'm going to leave you here.
I'll be back alone
in a couple of hours. So there's these three teenagers are left alone in a forest, just sitting around a fire, and they've no food, no water. And she goes back to her gaff.
Just to read her mum's diary. She goes home to read her mum's diary.
Goes, I have to go home and read it because she goes, I remember that name. I think maybe she knows Ezekiel Sims or she's seen him in a photo. She goes, I'm leaving you here. So she goes back to the house to pull out her notes, right? And when she goes back, she pulls out this notebook. And as she's flicking through, she starts reading it out fucking loud.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, her mum has all these notes on the Las Arañas spider people. She's like... And she gives, once they get her another exposition, she's like, they say they've got super speed, they can do it, and they can climb on the walls. And she goes, like, ceiling guy. That's what she's calling your man. The guy who just attacked him, Ezekiel Sims, because at one point he's crawling on the ceiling. She goes, like, ceiling guy. Just look at the camera while you're saying it, why don't you? Like, it's fucking so stupid. Like, and even at that, if her mom was at the very start, one of her first lines was, I don't believe any of this nonsense, it's all mythology. Why the fuck would her ma have shitloads of notes about these fucking
these
village
spider
fucking
jungle people?
People she thinks don't exist. She thinks don't exist. Why the fuck would she have tons of notes about them and what they can
ceiling
do?
Ceiling guy.
Ceiling guy. Anyway, there's a photo then, of course, of her ma and Ezekiel Sims. We get a cut back then to the girls. The girls are in the forest. They're pissed off they've been left there. And they say...
They do a totally rational thing.
Totally rational thing, being pissed off. 100% I get that. One of them goes, you know what? I actually know when we were driving down, there was a diner half a mile back down the road. Why don't we go down there? I've got my daddy's credit card. We'll go and fucking blow a load of money and eat a lot of food. It'll be great. And so that's where they go. The three of them head off and leave. And the scene in the diner is just fucking bonkersly stupid. Like, so they go in, they're stuffing their face, they're ordering everything on the menu. And... Sidney Sweeney is making eyes at these guys in the corner, and these like they look like high school kind of football guys wearing those Letterman jackets and stuff, you know, and they're all sitting around. They decide to go over and chat to them, and then Dakota Johnson has this premonition of Ezekiel Sims coming in the spider gear, fucking killing all the girls and beating the shit. So she knows when she gets to the forest and they're not there, she's like, oh, I know they're at that diner because. Yeah. I can hear the fucking song Poison playing by Britney Spears. I know where they are. We go back to the diner and the girls are up on the fucking table in the diner. Hmm. So these are three teenage girls and they're all dancing on top of a table full of lads who are basically
trying to lay low. Yep.
Right. This is supposed to be laying low and they're up. Why wouldn't anybody in the diner have stopped this? Is this like general, like during the day, restaurant kind of behavior.
This is Sidney Sweeney as well. Yeah, Sidney Sweeney, who's been played as the kind of sheepish.
She's been playing as coy, this bookish.
Kind of bookish girl who doesn't realize she's beautiful and she's really shy and whatever. She's obviously talking about a new bombshell. You're like, Like, at least try some makeup or something to conceal the fact that she's like, oh, I'm so shy. And then she's dancing on a table 10 seconds later.
Yeah,
she's like,
all what three the of them are giving it
is
socks.
Going on here?
So anyway, Ezekiel Sims does go in, does rock into the fucking place. And what's her face? She arrives in. Sorry, first of all, Cassie arrives in because she knows where they are. And then Ezekiel Sims comes in, kills them all, including Cassie, by stabbing her. And then she gets a fucking fast backwards fucking flashback and goes, okay, let's try this again. And this time, when Ezekiel Sims comes in, instead of arriving, she drives a cab straight through the place, runs him over in the car, and fucking gets the girls and goes, right, girls, into the taxi, we're getting the fuck out of here. And they go back to the motel, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, and the motel.
The best scenes again. I've ever seen in my life.
Just, the CPR thing is just ridiculous.
So like, why is this happening? Like,
yeah. So at one point, out of journalism, just before they managed to escape in the car, Ezekiel Sims has grabbed her by the wrist and she's gotten some of his poison, you know, fingernail, fucking whatever, and thumbnail poison into her, and she pulls it away in time. And then she explains to the girls, oh, it's a neurotoxin, and if it gets in, it could stop your heart. But don't worry, you can counteract that by using CPR.
Which I'm going to show you in a training CPR, sequence.
A known neurotoxin cure, CPR. So she gets a pillow, and rather than just using a pillow, they put a hoodie on the pillow. So we all know at a home that it's what they're doing is CPR on a person and not CPR on an actual pillow. So they put this hoodie on the pillow and they start doing it. And it's just this obviously foreshadowing thing. So if you do it like this,
I wonder if this will come back up later.
Yeah, exactly. When you're doing it, 1, 2, then you take over and each one of them, great job. We're all bonding now. We're all bonding and becoming friends. It's just, it's awkward. It's fucking terrible. So one of the three of them are there. She goes off then in the motel. She leaves the girls again, right? And she goes off and has this fucking telepathic. She goes back and has to the motel, isn't it?
Diner.
Diner. And has a fucking telepathic conversation with Sims. She shows up, he appears, and they have this conversation about what's going on.
He divulges information to her that she could never know. What?
Exactly. He's telling her shit. She's saying, you won't be able to stop me with your mind powers. I've got it. And she's not asking any questions as to why they can have this telepathic conversation. Mm. Nobody's explained it. Nobody explains it at any point. Why she's able to have this chat. He's not surprised by it. She's not surprised by the fact that he's there in this like fucking Jedi fucking Force ghost fucking thing. You know, there's no explanation as to why he's there. And anyway, she comes back and she goes, right, what I need to do is to head off to Peru.
Yeah.
So once again, she's leaving the girls. So she goes to the girls, right, I'm leaving you at Uncle Ben.
Stay here, I'll be back in a sec.
Stay here, I'll be back in a week. Go to Peru. So for where the fuck is she getting the money for this? But she goes, right, I'm heading off to Peru. He's rightly going, well, why would you be doing this? What's the crack? Like, I mean, I'll look after them, I'll keep them safe. But this seems insane. And he's like, no, off I go. She heads off into the jungle. She's got no compass. She's got no GPS. She's got nothing at all. All she has is this map, this 30-odd-year-old map that her mother had. And so we're assuming nothing has overgrown or changed in the jungle in over 3 decades. But she just goes fucking wandering off into the jungle. And within 4 minutes, she is found by the Los Arañas, right? Now, she's found by the main Los Arañas. No more the rest of them. And in the 30 years that have passed, the Los Arañas have upped their game. Because at the start, they're these like fucking cavemen, like fucking, you know, never being touched by civilization kind of people who are pretty much naked, covered in red paint. Apparently, this dude is dressed like fucking Nathan Drake. Like, he's dressed up like he's going off exploring. He's completely perfect fucking English. And it's like, and he's the original guy from the first, and he hasn't aged a day. He's like, why is he wearing normal gear now? Where's the red paint? Where are all his mates in the red paint?
Where's your spider stuff?
What the fuck is going on? Yeah, there's absolutely no explanation as to why at all. And so he's like, she wants to know what the fuck is going on, wants to know about Ezekiel Sims, and he explains to her, oh, he's cursed because he stole the spider, mm-hmm. and that's why he's having visions of his death. And then he does this, like, force push thing, and he pushes her soul out of her, like what's her face in Doctor Strange, where she pushes his spirit out of him. Yeah, does one of them. She falls down into the water, and then she has another one, and this time it's all the threads are being connected. She starts to see before she was born in this magic water. She sees her mother in the jungle. She sees her mother then finding out she's pregnant and finding out that her baby had a disease. And she's lived her whole life thinking her mother abandoned her. When really she finds out the reason that she went into the jungle is that her baby had a disease and that she had found out there was some possible experimental shit happening in Peru and that might be able to save her baby. And that's why she did it.
Yeah.
But apparently, I looked it up, apparently that particular disease that they mention, it can't be diagnosed in utero. So there's no way that doctor would know that that baby had that disease at all. He can't tell until after the baby's born. So, big lie.
Anyway, good research on part of the scriptwriters, of course.
Yeah, great research. They end up having, basically has a conversation with her mother. Well, she doesn't have a conversation with her mother so much as, oh my God, I thought you left me. And she gives her a hug.
She fucking hugs a close-up of them.
She hugs the mother, and we see the mother crying and being delighted to see her daughter. This is supposed to be you seeing her in the past. How are you able to communicate with her?
And why is she now?
How is she able to understand you? How is she seeing you? She is fucking. She's brown bread. You know what I mean? It makes zero sense at all. Anyway, he tells her. More foreshadowing. He's like, "No, you didn't get his powers." He comes out of it, and she goes, "Oh, I could see my mother. I saw all this shit. It's amazing she didn't leave me." And he goes, "Well, you know, you didn't get his superpowers or his poison powers or any of that shit. But, you know, you'll have crazy ass mental powers that you might even be able to one day be in more than one place at once."
Oh, doesn't he? Paraphrases the fucking iconic Spider-Man quote shamefully. It's like, when you take on the responsibility, you will take on the great power. It's like, oh, fuck off, lads, will you?
Completely bastardizes the fucking thing. And sets up, as I said, you're just straight away going, okay, well, I assume we're going to see that before the end of the movie. So she ends up coming back to the States just in time to stop, because the girls are in that they're leaving the house because Peter Parker's ma has gone into labor. And so for some reason, the girls decide to go to the hospital. Rather staying in the house where he doesn't know where they are. They jump in the car with them. They all go to the hospital. And of course, they get picked up on the NSA camera thing that your one in the chair is using.
Yeah.
And is able to go, here, Sims, this is where they are. So, you know, he shows up and he's just about to fucking kill them. And I think he's going to throw a grenade at them. And... she arrives back. She drives an ambulance because, you know, she is a paramedic. She drives an ambulance straight through the fucking bridge or a fucking out through the car park or something through a sign and rams into him and knocks him down. And hits him again. And they end up escaping. She goes, right, look, girls, come with me in this ambulance. Tells her, fuck Uncle Ben, you go and save your sister and fucking young unborn Peter Parker. I'm going to save the girls. So they head off in their ambulance, and he goes on, he's chasing them by jumping from car to car and all the rest of it and running up buildings, jumping from building to building like fucking superhero.
Like at this point, he's jumping around fucking pretty incredibly in terms of like jumping off buildings, climbing walls, you know, proper fucking super villain shit. And it must be said, like his premonition or the reason he's trying to kill the girls because they kill him in the future, in his dream, like they throw him out a fucking two-story building and he dies in the premonition. Oh, yeah. He's just like, no, what am I going to do? And he's fucking jumping off buildings here, climbing fucking walls. Just like, what are you scared about?
And the time she takes him down in the diner, she hits him with the taxi, drives it through the place and hits him.
Gone. Yep.
Yeah, and then he tries to grab onto her with while he's just trying to hold on to his consciousness, and she kind of basically just kicks him off. You know, get away from me. Like, that's it. It's fucking... there's no consistency there at all, but he's chasing after them. And this is where we arrive to the Sidewinder Missile Factory. So it's a fireworks factory. And she arrives in, and she's got this bag that she pulls from the ambulance that's full of, you know, road flares, which is understandable. Yeah. But for some reason has a load of fucking, like, tear gas canisters. So she goes, girls, take these. She starts rolling gas canisters around the place because she's obviously had premonitions of what's going to happen. Where did you get these gas canisters? And she goes, girls, take a flare, light it, stick it in all these boxes, you know, full of fireworks. So the fireworks start going off, man. And oh my God, these things are full on hellfire missiles. Like they're fucking, one of them hits him and he fucking goes flying, like fucking like he's being hit by a rocket flying across. He goes there, girls, get down, tells them to get down. A firework hits the wall and fucking blows a big hole in the brick wall. Because they're like, how are we going to get through here? And a fucking firework blows a hole through the brick wall. What kind of fucking fireworks are they making in this place?
They have a fundamental misunderstanding of fireworks, generally.
Yeah, like,
what the fuck is going on here?
So because they end up climbing up to the roof. And they're on the roof, I assume, of the same building. I'm pretty sure it's the same building they're on the roof of. But the roof has a massive Pepsi sign. Is this the Pepsi fireworks factory that we're always hearing about, you know, that no one ever talks about? But they go onto the roof of the fucking Pepsi fireworks place. And then the helicopter shows up, right? And the firework comes flying at Ezekiel Sims. And he goes and he just flicks it like that. And he knocks it. And it goes fucking flying up, hits the helicopter, and blows up the fucking helicopter. Like, holy shit, what the fuck is in these fireworks? Like,
it's crazy.
It's fucking mental. And so the whole scene on the fucking roof is terrible. And on this note, this is where they completely sold people on something different in the trailer.
Yeah.
In the 100%. Trailer, you see her holding up this thing. Like she's after catching this big, huge piece of metal because it makes this big dung, and she catches him while not looking. And and you're like, oh, cool, she's got super strength. This is going to be some badass bad character. But it's not. What she's doing is she has, because of her premonition, she knows a firework is about to hit. So she lifts up this fucking piece of corrugated metal and it bounces off the firework. So she's able to hold the thing up and stop this firework with her hand despite not having super strength. But it's able to blow a fucking hole in a brick wall.
Concrete wall.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it fucking makes no sense at all.
And it's so, it must be said, it's like the visuals as well on show here are just piss poor. Like 80 million fucking 80 quid. Like fucking hell, it's appalling.
It's shocking. Oh. As the fight, she's doing her best to time everything. So like, okay, you duck now, you get out of here now, to try and keep the girl safe. But he ends up knocking them all, hitting them all, punching them all, and they're all kind of hanging on by, you know, their last grip of, you know, a bar about to fall to their deaths off this big building. And this is where he says to her, to let us all know, like from earlier on, there's no, look, you can't save them all. You can't be in all places at once.
Can
like,
you be in three places at once?
Yeah. It's like, well, obviously she can. The well-dressed man who used to be a fucking
well-dressed jungle
Aborigine style dude, jungle man, has already said that she can. So, of course, that's what she does. She taps into her magic, being a bunch of place powers, and she separates into these three ghosts and is like, okay, come on. And she actually, if you only kind of helps two of them up, one of them she just kind of walks over and goes, it's okay, you're grand. It's like, no, you're both pulling and saving the other two. Maybe give her a hand up as well. Don't just say everything's going to be okay.
You'll be okay.
It's like a 10-story drop. She's going to die. Like, so anyway, while he's up there while she's up there having her weird fucking three places at once powers, he fucking jumps at her, fucking knocks her over. And we have the kind of standoff between the two of them. And so one of her very, very early scenes is we see a neon light for a gigantic letter S. At the sign. So it's one of the very first things. So then, of course, he's coming towards her and he's like, I told you, you couldn't stop me with your mind powers. And she's like, what makes you so sure? And she keeps side-eyeing, keeps looking at the sign. We're like, yeah, we get it. We all know. We saw it ages ago. We know what it fucking is. And the sign, of course, is crumbling because the helicopter is hitting it. And she keeps trying to back up. It's like, we all fucking know. Anyway, the whole thing falls down.
What's going to happen, man?
And falls down, traps him. He ends up basically getting killed buy a Pepsi sign. There's one more big advertisement for Pepsi. Ezekiel Sims falls down and ends up getting killed by that.
Oh, God.
All right. It's fucking, it's so...
But yeah, she so falls dumb. Into the water, right? What?
Oh yeah, well, her falling into the she falls into the water as well. And here's but it's even more stupid. These fucking fireworks again, man, are still going off. So this thing has been going on for about 10 minutes. These fireworks are flying around. She falls in the water. A firework has gone up, changed trajectory, flown down, straight
under the water,
down under the water, through the water, and fucking exploded in her face while she's under the water. Right. So she goes and she cringes, she curls up after getting hit in the water, and she's sinking down under the water. And Sydney Sweeney bails into the water and gets her, brings her up, and they've got her up. And of course, this is where girls, do you remember the CPR that they were talking about for neurotoxin? Also works for drowning. Let's all take turns doing the CPR that we very heavily told you was going to happen earlier on. So they all start doing their fucking CPR on her. Of course, she comes back to life, and she wakes up in the hospital. And for some reason, after everything that's happened, now she is the most serene person in the world. She has woken up blind. She's in a hospital bed. She's got these things over her eyes, and now we really see she's accepted that she can see everything.
She's in a wheelchair for some reason as well.
Yeah,
she can't walk anymore.
We get to that, says in the while she's sitting in the bed. But she gives a line about against the responsibilities of things. She says, "Don't worry. What's her face? Robert has had her kid, and Ben is delighted. Uncle Ben, he's all the fun but none of the responsibility." And she has a throwaway line of, "That's what he thinks," which I thought was kind of funny.
It's a good line.
It's a thing. Good line. Which isn't like one good line out of like 3,000 lines. You know,
it's not bad.
And then she's fucking, she's super calm about the whole thing. But when we cut to thing, now they're all living together, right? She cut to her, she's living in this apartment and she's looking out of this big kind of loft style window. It's like big fucking thing. It's almost shaped like a giant eye web thing. She's looking out, she's dressed up in her finery and she's in this like super high tech looking wheelchair.
Yeah.
At no point have they explained why she's paralyzed. Like when it hit her in the face, she was able, she had the reaction of curling up and that. Like, so there's nothing.
She just fell into
it
didn't the
just hit
she
her and she was already limber. So it's like, there's no mention at all of why she's paralyzed. But apparently, and I know she's paralyzed in the comics, they don't explain in the movie that she's paralyzed now. So she's fucking, anyway, she's in her wheelchair and then she has a few little moments when the girls arrive in. They seem to all be living together now. They don't explain how they got the gaff they're living in, who owns the apartment, why they all live together. Is she their carer now? What the fuck is going on? They're all living together. And she starts having the same tier one, God bless you. And she's like, what? And then she sneezes, things like that. This real smarmy arse fucking look on her face. And then she has kind of a line where she's like, she talks about how what's going to happen in the future, how they'll go on to be superheroes together. And then it cuts to them all basically in their spider gear, their spider outfits. And there's the three of them and her outfit is fucking terrible. She had basically has, they, it looks like they painted, those goggles that fucking Doc Brown wears in
Back to the Future 2. Yeah, yeah.
The silver ones. Yeah. They basically just painted those red and stuck them on her. and gave her like,
save money on that 80 million budget.
It's not even leather. It's like, she's got vinyl gloves on. You see the little spider crawl over her. He's big, thick. Vinyl fucking gloves she has on.
Fucking stupid.
And it's ridiculous. And basically that's it. That's kind of the last scene of the movie. I think I barely even gave you a chance to jump in on so much of that, Daz, because I just so looking at my notes and kind of going, Jesus, each part was more and more ridiculous and stupid than the last. Like, it's how your one could blame this on toxic males and not everybody who made this fucking movie shite. Why didn't you just say it was the people who gave me this shit fucking script?
Yeah.
That's why it was crap. Like it cost $80 million to make.
Which is astonishing.
It's on track to make 100. So it's made 80 so far. They think it'll make 100.
Maybe. That's astonishing. But
worldwide. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Which worldwide. Is, so not even making it. Not even the US. Yeah. But you know, you think of like studio involvement when you see movies like this, but it just kind of strikes you that there probably wasn't enough studio involvement, that like they just let the writers run fucking rampant and let a first time director, because it's even like normally you'd see something like this and the director would come out and go, oh, you know, it was taken out of my control, like Josh Trank and Fantastic Four. But she was a co-writer on it and an executive producer, so she's fully knows what's fucking going on here. You know what I mean? We were saying, like Wonder Woman 1984, that's an example of when somebody, based on the success of something, gets too much free reign and the studio stand back. And Patty Jenkins said, okay, yeah, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to write this and writes an absolute fucking train wreck of a movie. But and the same happened with Taika Waititi, Love and Thunder, and Rebel Moon. Zach has fucking free reign. Yeah. It's just like, not to fucking say studios should get involved because they shouldn't, but somebody had to fucking get a grip of the people pulling the strings on this. What are you doing?
Did nobody at any point, Ludwig, did not think that this combination of writers and directors and a fairly hefty budget of 80 million, did no one think, listen, guys, maybe let's fucking rethink this, or let's push it out, let's really run the script past somebody else. That's just, I mean, it's because, as you said, these the lads who wrote it were proud of it. You saw them at the premiere on the red carpet talking about it. They were delighted. They were saying, like, they lied. They said, Madame Web has no backstory, so we could basically do whatever we want. She's a comic book character, so she has a story. You know what I mean? You could just tell a story from it and then use it to maybe tie in with the Peter Parker thing. If you didn't set that 20 years previous, leave out the fucking Uncle Ben stuff, whatever else you want to do. Set it in present day. You could then tie some of this into your current Sony stuff. Have Dakota Johnson as Madame Web, have Sydney Sweeney as Spider-Woman, you know, and the other two Spider-Women. Have them tying in with like fucking Venom, the Venom movie, or the Kraven movie, or the current Tom Holland Spider-Man. You could have done some of that, but you decided to make the choice of making it set 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Now none of those characters can play those. The franchise you wanted to make would have had to have been, this movie would have had to have been a stellar success in order for you to make a franchise that wouldn't involve Tom Holland.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. The fact that they're setting it up and they have the gall and fucking lunacy to not only have a premiere for this fucking thing and go on a red carpet and sit down with your fellow peers and watch this on a fucking big screen. I'd be like, sick note from the doctor, please. Fuck that shit. But they had the gall and the delusion to think that this is like, oh, we're setting all this up, because the trailer just lied to everybody and said, you know, this is Madame Web and the three kind of spider women who are in the movie for about fucking 20 seconds.
Oh, and they're in those costumes. Yeah, they're in that very, very last scene. Yeah. And then just a couple of times when he's having his premonitions of getting killed. Yeah. But at no point do we see them out, you know, kicking ass in their gear. And like, they've given, like, Sydney Sweeney's outfit is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Not so much Celeste O'Connor's one. I wasn't mad at that one. It looked a bit weird. But they've obviously spent a few quid designing the costumes and everything for them, to just have them basically in either a flashback or actually no, flash forwards. Basically, in two flash forwards is the only time we get to see them in their gear. That trailer wrote a check that this piece of shit movie did not catch.
Absolutely. And they just missed a fucking boat. Missed the boat completely, because even like, the villain, you know, as atrocious as he is, but the concept of a, you know, a Spider-Man-esque villain is an interesting prospect. Like Brightburn, you know, that movie with the little kid with Superman powers and kind of turns evil. Like, that kind of stuff is it's an interesting premise if you kind of lean into that a bit. But yeah, even the sequences with when we get his vision with the three spider women, even those scenes are shocking and shoddy. You're thinking like, at least give us one action set piece that shows any type of fucking filming prowess whatsoever. But it's like schizophrenic cinematography. All her premonitions and stuff, it's just, I keep saying, like 90s fucking MTV editing, and it's just felt like the cinematography
I don't think those scenes where the three girls are fighting him, I don't think any of them were on set at the same time. Like, that was all individually shot. Like, you don't get to see two of them on the screen, I don't think, at the same time. There might have been a kick or something, but I think for the most part, like, Sydney Sweeney's kind of just shooting these powers at around, and then it cuts to him and then it's back, and then you see you're kind of hanging upside down. There's none of them in the set and the same. I don't think they were on set at all together.
And it's painfully obvious. Yeah, it looked like the cinematographer was having a seizure. The editing made me nauseous. Like, and Madame Webb's, like, Cassie's, when she's having her premonitions or seeing the future, even that stuff is just, it's supposed to be, oh, you know, it's inside her head and it's, you know, these powerful imagery, but it was just fucking horrible to watch. It just made me want to just go, stop doing that. Stop doing what you're doing. I don't like this editing. It's, and the sound design is just fucking horrible. Like, sound design in the subway. Just like, oh, we'll just get a sound of a subway car and just turn it up really fucking loud.
Yeah.
Just fuck it. It's really annoying and it's really hurting my fucking ears. Stop. You know, like, it's comfortably one of the worst movies I've ever seen in the cinema. One of the worst movies I've probably ever seen. It's like, it's abysmal from start to finish. Awful concept, awful script. Yeah, we talked about the set pieces that are just shocking. They're just, it's just,
you can see why Dakota Johnson obviously fired her ad agency and stuff after
when the trailer came out. Yeah, straight away.
Yeah, when the trailer came out, and like, she was even saying herself, like, most of this, I don't even know what it's going to be like because I shot most of it at blue screen. So
yeah,
I don't even really know if it's going to be good or not. She knew nothing about superheroes. She couldn't even name the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah,
like I don't mind her as an actress. I don't know. I don't really, you know, I haven't seen her in a massive amount of stuff, but she's grand. But I don't think she was given anything to work with here anyway. You know what I mean? Like, her lines, fair enough, are fucking stupid, but you don't give her much to work with. Adam Scott was probably the best thing about it, and he was only in it for, you know, a small amount of time.
Yeah, they have one scene where they're kind of chemistry, and they're just, it's probably about 40 seconds where they're just chatting in the break room and in the hospital or something, and it's like, ah, you can see they're having a bit of crack, and you're like, that's, yeah, one little scene from a completely different fucking movie. Like, we've reviewed some terrible fucking movies on this podcast, but at least they had it's something going from this, some saving grace, whether it was an action set pieces or trying to do something interesting, even with Rebel Moon and stuff. You know, obviously trying to do something. It's not working, but they're trying to do it. But there's just, this just had nothing. I remember watching it and just going, it's a nothing movie. It's a setup for something that's not coming, and the setup is awful. The basic premise, or fucking lack thereof premise, is just embarrassingly poor. And it's a wonder, actually, that, like, I don't know what's more shocking, if that this movie was actually chosen to be released, or that it was actually greenlit in the first place and someone goes, yeah, here's 80 million quid. Go get them, guys. It's just like, what the fuck?
And like, what they've got an offer later on this year, you know, from like Sony Marvel, like the Craven Red Band trailer, you know, the proper action looking thing, is it's an R-rated movie, looks fucking terrible, even with all that serious action. And you know me, I'm a sucker for fucking over the top action.
Yeah.
The trailer for that looks terrible. And then the other one is Carnage 3, you know, and if it's anything as bad as, or not, sorry, Venom 3, if it's anything as bad as Let Them Be Carnage, you know, we're talking, they're going to be putting out three absolute bombs this year. I don't see either.
They won't make any money back.
These are going to be three absolute bombs. And I think you said something like they're contractually obliged.
They have to make they have to make something in the Spider-Man genre, or the category, every 2 years or something like that, to keep the license, to keep making Spider-Man movies, which have been good to great. On their end, and but just to keep that license, you can't release something like this. You know, it's just like, we're going to waste money to keep a license for those Spider-Man movies that do make a lot of money. But now, as you're saying, with the lineup coming out later on this year, is it worth the studio losing fucking hundreds of millions in marketing and budgets on these movies, three movies this year that don't look great, just to keep the Spider-Man license to release a movie every 3 to 4 years? Like, yeah, I don't know about that.
And especially like the movies that you're making them, they're not of main, as I said, they're not of, like, okay, Venom, everybody knows Venom, but Venom's kind of can be good or a bad guy, depending. He's kind of anti-hero kind of stuff, but not the same as the people that are going to know Venom, that are going to know Spider-Man, and they might even know Venom and just think, oh, he's a bad guy with Spider-Man. So why would I go and see a standalone movie for him? Kraven is a bad guy. You know what I mean? So again, you know,
no one has a fucking clue who he is.
Like. You know, I know Kraven is because I would have read Spider-Man comics, so like, you know, or played games, all that kind of shit. But people aren't going to know. So you're, and the same with Madame Web. People aren't going to know who these characters are. You're putting $80 million into what you're trying to make a franchise out of. There's nothing to get people involved in the first place. Why would people want to go and see a shitload of Madame Web stuff based on this? This movie is what, this is the effort you've put in of what you wanted to make a franchise, like a Madame Web franchise with these Spider Women and Dakota Johnson as Madame Web. And this was what you did. Mm. You know, like that they were shocked. And there's actual articles coming out saying, you know, Sony's franchise for Madame Web now dead in the water because of how bad the movie's doing. Like, fucking, of course, was it was dead on arrival. You know, everybody fucking knew it. Like, it's just
even the people that made it knew it.
I remember a couple of months ago when we were doing this show, and I said I was looking forward to checking it out because I didn't realize who was writing it. I just said, okay, I know the director S.J. Campbell had directed some episodes of some TV shows that I liked, and I thought, okay, maybe this could be good.
Give it a chance.
Just like, you know, give it a chance. And then the minute I fucking saw the writers that were attached and saw their back catalog, oh, fuck, here we go.
And like, we mentioned that before, that the fact that they keep getting work and thousands of writers. I know lots of fucking writers, but it's like in Ireland and in fucking New York and stuff that like struggling to get anything made. And they're really decent fucking writers, really good. Thousands and thousands of writers around the place that can't get any decent scripts or get any decent work, but these shower of shits getting fucking colossal sums of money to write this absolute fucking drivel is shocking. Like, you know, like it's fine to give the director a go, but like directorial debut, like she'll never direct anything again. Like, this is colossal failure on her part. But she can go back to directing TV. It's like, she does some good TV work, but no doubt these writers will keep on getting work, and the producers will be onto the next red carpet, like going, yeah, fucking clowns, a lot of them.
Well, look, it's over, and I have seen that movie two more times than anybody else should ever see it. I'm sure I can speak on behalf of Daz when I say this is a big, do not go and see this movie.
No. Oh, we should say down. Spoiler warning.
we didn't bother with a spoiler warning because, as we said,
because you shouldn't
at the end of
it.
Last week's episode, you shouldn't see it, and you shouldn't. It's not even worth your time to throw on if it hits fucking Amazon Prime or Disney or whatever the fuck, whoever it ends up. Don't bother wasting your time with it. It's absolute garbage, and it's not even fun garbage. It's just a bad, bad movie that was fun for us to take the piss out of, but you know,
torturous to watch.
I really wouldn't. You know, there's some great movies coming out this year, including Dune, which is out now. Go and see that instead.
Absolutely.
Have you got anything else, Daz?
No, Jesus. I haven't laughed that much now in quite some time. A pain in my cheeks. that was brilliant. Well done for seeing it twice. That was a great run through. That was fucking hilarious. We saw that movie, so you don't have to. So... on that note, we will finish up this episode. And just a note to, next week we will be reviewing June 2, I think. We're not going to do an in-depth. We might just do a short kind of overview of it because we don't want to get into spoilers with a movie that is just coming out, a movie of this pedigree. And June 2 is, I think, under 200 million when you consider that compared to Madame Web. Yeah, anyway. Good to get Madame Web off our slate. Just keep all the feedback coming. If you have anything, if you've seen Madame Web and you want to tell us how fantastic it is or how atrocious it is, do hit us up on middleagedgeeks@yahoo.com. Anything else from yourself, Phil?
No, that's it. No. Thanks for everybody for checking us out on YouTube and all the rest of it. Keep doing that, liking, sharing, subscribing, and telling people about the podcast because it really helps. And we'll looking forward to seeing you all on the next one.
All right. See you later, guys.